Welcome back to the Paranormal Classroom, where we take attendance for the unexplained. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay, and we're two teacher moms talking about stuff that freaks us out. There we go. Let me turn off all notifications. Have we ever had one of us go back to back?
Nope, this is the first time. And it's super nice of you. I'm really grateful.
I don't mind at all. I found a fun one, or at least it was fun for me.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see what you think. All right. So today we're going to,
What's haunting you? What's haunting
I always forget because I just get so excited and I don't know, just in my head about it. So yes, pause my brain. What's haunting you, Amanda?
Should I tell them what happened to me today or?
Oh, not? God. Sure. I mean, it's the continuation of the dog saga 2025.
I would say the majority of our episodes have included something about the dog saga in my family. If you need to know what we're talking about, you got to go back through all the episodes because it's been months of dog saga. But we had a dog. It didn't work out. We found what we thought was a wonderful home for it. And I was getting messages from the new owner that they were having a hard time. And today, this morning, the dog comes tearing through the house like a bullet.
Through the dog door.
It's frightening my youngest daughter. And she's like, what is happening? Because this owner had just given up and they had just dropped her off in our backyard.
Unbelievable.
Without a word or anything, just dropped her back off with us.
And then sent a message saying, she's in your backyard.
Yes. So we have the dog again.
What if you guys had been out of town? What if you were gonzo? Well,
I don't know.
That's such a terrible, terrible thing to do. So inhumane.
Yeah. It's not a good choice. But I'd rather the dog be with me than just if he just let it run away or dropped it off somewhere.
Or worse.
So I guess I'm glad. I'm happy that the dog is with us instead of those other places. But the dog needs a loving home and someone who can handle a Malinois. So we're going to go back to looking.
Back to the drawing board. Mm-hmm. Anybody know any cops who need a new dog for training? Man. Yeah, she is a lot. She's very high energy, very agile. She'd be an amazing search and rescue dog.
Absolutely.
With the right training.
Mm-hmm.
Godspeed on that, man. I don't even know. I wouldn't even know what to do. But now you have two puppies.
Yeah, because in the meantime, we had gotten the right dog for us.
Yep.
A golden retriever. It was the right dog for our family. So now...
It's unbelievable.
I'm just a mess right now. I'm a mess.
And it's spring break. You should be relaxed, mm-hmm. chill. But you got to go on a little trip to Oregon.
That was fun.
And you learned that Oregon State University Corvallis has a cryptozoology class.
They do. They have a college of cryptids within the College of Agriculture and Fisheries.
Hilarious.
It's incredible, isn't it?
That's wild.
Yeah. They have official posters and everything as you're walking through the college of their courses on cryptids and Sasquatch studies and research. They do research.
What?
Go Oregon State University.
You can get a degree in that?
I don't know if you can get a degree in it, but you can.
Certainly have a good time taking a couple classes.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. That's fascinating. I'd love to take that class. Huh. Well, nothing super stressful is going on in my life right now, knock on wood. I am trying to figure out the electrical system of my daughter's 2008 Prius. So I've been teaching myself through YouTube videos and different various articles and Reddits how to fix her car because the headlamps, the low lamps don't work. High beams work just fine. Right and left turn signal work just fine. It's just the fog lights and the normal headlight lamps do not work. So I changed fuses today. None of the fuses were faulty or blown, but I changed them all anyway for the headlamps. And now I think it might be the relay. So I've ordered a new relay. And if that doesn't work, then we're going to have to find a mechanic because that means it's a bigger mechanical or electrical issue.
I think it's so cool that you try to do that stuff first.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're so talented with all your little tinkering and mind and engineering and building.
I just don't like spending money or talking to strangers. So if I have to go give a stranger my money, that's to do something where I don't really trust that I'm not going to be, mm-hmm. Grifted, if that's a thing. I'm not going to be taken for female. So oftentimes women are, I mean, it sucks, but it's true that women are often taken advantage of in the world of car mechanics and such. And a lot of people are, because if you don't know what you don't know, and mm-hmm. so you just want your car fixed. So if they tell you it's going to cost this much, it's always like $1,000 because the thing is at the bottom of the engine, so they have to take the entire right. engine out. We're building engines wrong if everything right. is on the bottom. That's like a cupcake upside down. You wouldn't right. serve a frosting with cupcake upside down. It doesn't make any
sense.
You
need to build a car so that it's easy to fix. But I think they don't do it on purpose. Around. I think it's on purpose so they can get more of your money.
It's, everything's a scam and mm-hmm. a conspiracy.
Everything. You look so cute, though. You're even wearing overalls. You kind of remind me of... Thanks. Remember in Ghostbusters, the female Ghostbusters?
Oh, yeah, I
Kate McKinnon's her. Character. Was like, sometimes you remind me of her. Like a mad
That's
scientist.
Funny. Yeah, I feel like that a lot. I feel like that a lot. I have all these electronic components on my dining room table right now because I'm trying to teach myself how to use microbit processors to monitor my hydroponic gardens. So cool. A, hydroponic gardening is new. Mm-hmm. B, monitoring like pH levels in the water and whatever other factors. And I'm trying to build a robotic parakeet.
Oh, you see what I'm saying? People, Lindsay is the coolest person I know. You're so cool.
You're very nice. You're very nice.
You're just nifty. You're always entertaining to be around. You are.
That's hilarious. Because I get bored. I get bored easily. I mm-hmm. love learning new things. It's way cheaper than getting a PhD because that would be the next move and that's useless because I don't want to go into admin. So I don't right. know. I don't know. But anyway, you hear lawnmowers in the background. It is a beautiful, sunny Wednesday. We're recording in the middle of the day.
Spring today. Break.
Yep. Spring break. Yahoo. It's already halfway over, which is annoying AF, but it's all right. It's all right. We've got another few wonderful days left.
We only have 2 months of school left. And a lot of that is testing season.
That's true. That is, oh, that gives me the willies because my daughter graduates this year and I'm not ready. Oh. My father, her grandfather asked yesterday, when does she graduate? When's her graduation date? And I was like, I don't even know. I didn't even know. I had to look it up. June 14th.
Oh, I want to come, actually.
It stresses me out. We're not going to have a party until August.
Okay.
And she didn't really want a party at all, but I'm like, no, we're having a party. We got you to this point. We want a party.
We want a party.
We're celebrating. Plus, we'll have our new deck, and it'll be a fun thing to do. And so that's going to happen once we get back from Europe. So we haven't set a date for that, but August sometime.
Okay.
Most of the graduates will have it in June. And so we wanted to buck that trend and give people a little gap, some space between parties. So
great. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, today we're going to dig up the past and dust off some weird.
Oh, that's a cute
What else
saying.
Is new? What else is new? We're going to dive into an ancient artifact that's not haunted that we know of, but it's definitely mysterious. And it's one that I am embarrassed to admit that I knew nothing about.
Is it the Voynich manuscript?
Very good guess, but no.
That is, I have plans to do that, an episode on that for you.
Okay, good to know, because I've considered doing that a few times, but I've listened to so many podcasts about it that I was like, I don't want to do... I feel like I would just be repeating at this point. But if you haven't listened to all those podcasts, go for it. But this one changed the way we understand history itself.
Hmm.
We're talking about the Rosetta Stone.
Oh, I've heard of it.
You have?
But
okay.
But you know what I've heard of? I think it's a language app.
It is.
I think that's what I know.
The app is named after this stone. So good. You know just about as much as I did.
I don't think I know anything about the stone is. Yeah.
Good. Good. Okay. Yes. And I even wrote on here, like, the app. Yes. Embarrassed to admit, I knew it was probably based on a real thing, that app. And sure is. I knew it was maybe a rock of some kind, being that it was called the Stone. But I had no idea how it got its name, where it was found, or how it worked.
And you looked it up, and that's what we're going to learn about
today? I have
today?
15 sources.
Dang!
I have spent
some
time.
Who are you?
Time.
That's not what we do.
Listen, it's spring break. I like learning. We just went over this.
Our audience is in for a treat. Real research tonight.
Real research. It might be an educational. I can't even say the word educational.
But it's you can trust us.
Educational podcast. Okay, so here we go. The Rosetta Stone. It's also not as big as I imagined it would be.
I imagine it to be...
Oh, you imagine it very small, like a softball big. Size.
I don't know what it is.
Like one of those Gideon Bibles at the hotel room.
Yes. That's
a... It's definitely bigger than that. It is 4 foot tall.
Oh.
Gray slab of rock.
It looks almost like as tall that. As me.
I'm showing Amanda a picture right
this
now.
This picture she's showing me reminds me of the Moses' Ten Commandments slab, the tablets.
That were in the Ark of the Covenant.
But bigger.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. It is a lot like that. Also made out of rock. Inscribed with stuff. Yep. So it is this 4 foot tall gray slab of rock that unlocked thousands of years of lost language and buried civilizations.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All on that one rock, they were able to break a code from...
Yes. And I'm going to tell you how.
Okay.
I didn't know this until this week. I'm embarrassed to admit that, but I've never taken the time to go, Rosetta Stone, the app, Rosetta Stone, the thing. What's... Had no idea. Huh. So here we go. We're talking about how it was made, how it was lost and found, and how it became one of the most powerful keys to human history.
Cool.
All of my sources for this episode will be listed as footnotes on our transcript for the podcast, but most notably, I loved the British Museum website, britishmuseum.org, and a 2010 BBC News article titled, Egypt Demands Rosetta Stone Return.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. That's nice of you to link those. I have to warn you, as you're telling me this story, since we are a paranormal podcast, I probably will be looking for little connections to paranormal things.
There's definitely some to be made.
Okay.
Yep. Verifiable or not, there are some to be made. This single slab of rock cracked open the world of ancient Egypt because it was carved in three languages.
Whoa.
Yeah. So... I'm calling this next part segment one, a discovery that shook the world. So let's rewind to 1799. Napoleon Bonaparte, heard of him?
Heard of him.
Is in Egypt with his army.
He's a tiny man who keeps his one hand in his coat.
Yes. Maybe he only had one hand.
Maybe.
That would explain some of his behavior.
I know
problems.
He was short too. He was short and angry.
So he was trying to expand French influence. Soldiers are building a fort near the town of Rosetta, which is modern-day Rashid, when they stumble across a black basalt stone carved with writing. That slab would become the key to understanding a language that had been lost for nearly 1,400 years.
Wow.
It's a long time. But how did it end up there? How do you think it ended up there, Amanda? Where did it come from?
Where are
from?
We again? Is this Rosetta France?
This is in Egypt.
Oh, in Egypt. I didn't know Napoleon went to Egypt.
He sure did. It's not that far, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Okay. How do I think this giant slab of rock got into Egypt? Where this, they don't have rocks like this? Is it mostly a...
I don't know that they don't have rocks like this, but this particular rock obviously stood out.
I'm just asking because maybe the rock is from right where they're standing.
There was, but this was definitely, it had been touched by human hands prior.
I don't know, like they drug it through the sand on camels? I don't know.
On the backs of camels?
No, like, well, maybe, but
camels. Maybe
I'm picturing them just dragging it, pulling it.
Do camels, are camels famous for being pack animals? I mean, I know you can sling a bag over their humps or whatever.
I'm not sure.
Which just seems awkward. Like, it just slides off one way or the other. You have to get it perfectly balanced in the middle of their bodies.
I don't know a lot about camels, but...
They're not comfortable.
I did see this weird... You know how you like YouTube just puts weird things in front of your face when you're at night and you're scrolling? I saw somebody cooking up a hamel hump. A camel hump.
Cooking it?
Yes. It's like a big, giant, thick water balloon.
Why would you cook it?
They ate it.
That's disgusting. But there's other parts of the camel. First of all, it's a camel. Why are we eating a camel? It's like eating a horse. No. Ew.
Yeah. So I've seen not the inside of a hump.
Ew. That is Facebook, YouTube, whatever, whoever did that. The algorithm was off. What are you looking at that it's giving you camel hump video cooking?
Weird food things show up all the time. We were talking about how I saw somebody eat a baby chicken.
Oh, the
because
balut.
it just pops up. Like you get no warning.
That's why.
You don't consent to this stuff. They just put weird food in front of your face.
So you did YouTube something shorts. Wrong. You got to clear out your history, sell some cookies. I don't know what you got to do, but you got to do something. That's awful. That's traumatizing. Okay, we're going to go back even farther. Well, way farther. Egypt, 196 BCE.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, so that's before Common Era, like really long time ago. The pharaoh is Ptolemy the Fifth, mm-hmm. which is Ptolemy. Okay. Ptolemy the Fifth at the ripe old age of 13.
Oh, that's right. They had leaders who were teenagers. Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, in Europe they did too, right? And they'd be like leaders in name only kind of thing. And then they'd mm-hmm. have their advisors or whatever that were actually calling the shots, getting in their ears. So the country at this point in Egypt was deeply divided, facing rebellion in the south and pressure from outside powers. So to consolidate power and win the favor of Egyptian priests, Ptolemy issues a decree. Doesn't this sound a little bit familiar? Let me back up and reread that. The country is deeply divided, mm-hmm. facing rebellion in the south and pressure from outside powers. To consolidate power and win the favor of Egyptian priests, Ptolemy issues a decree. This was called the Decree of Memphis, affirming tax breaks for temples and publicly declaring his generosity. So it's basically this whole stone is a royal press release of like, oh, look how weird. Generous I am. Okay. And tax breaks for everybody. So there's a quote from the Decree of Memphis translated from the Greek inscription. And the translation reads, "The king has given much silver and grain to the temples and has remitted the debts owed by many people." It's tax breaks and gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the wild part. The Rosetta Stone is written in three scripts, three languages.
Because in that time, in that part of the world, there were three different groups of people who mm-hmm. spoke three different languages. Okay.
Yep. So everyone in Egypt could understand it. Greek for the rulers. Demotic, D-E-M-O-T-I-C.
I've never heard of that language.
Me neither. For the everyday Egyptians, and hieroglyphs for the priests and temple use.
Whoa.
Yeah. So hieroglyphic is, of course, written, drawn language.
Pictograms, right? Or pictures
yes.
that
yes.
symbolize, do they symbolize words or do they symbolize sounds?
It's sounds. Okay. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a second. They used to think it was, must have represented... must have been like pictures telling a story, like, mm-hmm. but that's not what it is. So that's the sacred script for the gods is the hieroglyphic, which is why that was important to the priests and temple users. Demotic would be like the everyday Twitter X thread version.
Gotcha.
Right. Your Instagram. It's your daily Instagram post.
It's for the masses. Yeah. And so there's no punctuation and there's no. bad spelling. No one can spell there.
Right.
I get
or
it.
Where or weird or there's no apostrophes in the right spot. Extra apostrophes where they're not needed. And then Greek, because the Ptolemies were basically ruling Egypt like Greek exchange students. So
okay.
Yeah. But no one knew at the time this triple language stunt would someday become the Google Translate of archaeology.
That's cool.
Yeah. So what the Ptolemies didn't know, that decision to write it in all three would change human history. Segment two. Do you have any processing questions, comments so far?
All I've been thinking of while you've been telling the story is what would it be like today, in today times? Imagine we don't have the internet. We don't have newspapers, print. We're still communicating through stone tablets.
We'd all be a lot stronger.
Kinds of things you'd like see on stone tablets just in the middle of like... A sign outside
you
your
better
neighborhood,
mean it.
A sign in front of Safeway.
No one's trolling anybody.
Right.
When it takes that long to carve in there. Like, you're going to mean it.
Right.
It could be better. I was reading an article, you know, trying to stay up with Economic Times. And one thing that popped up was like, Walgreens has learned that they make less money with their locked cases. Well, yeah, because you give everybody the chance to avoid... like buyer's remorse, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're like, oh, I really want that whatever special thing that's hidden, that's locked behind, not hidden, but locked behind glass. Mm-hmm. I got to push a button, wait 30 minutes.
Wait forever for
somebody
to come.
Decide to work there. And then, I'm like, I don't really need that bottle of wine or.
Oh, yeah. I leave stuff all the time because they don't answer that red button.
Yeah. So they could have saved a lot of money at Walgreens and just asked any of us shoppers 5 years ago, hey, do you spend more or less money with these cases locked? Less.
Less.
And there you go. You didn't need to research it.
Right.
Anyway. All right. So Where was I? Why would, did I go on that?
You're just asking me to like, pr- like share my things. Thoughts.
Well, yeah, and like that, just talking about how what would we see on the stones now? Like, my point of bringing up the Walgreens thing is like, we're not gonna take the time to do really challenging things for menial reasons.
Right,
it's gonna be meaningful.
What would school be like though? You know, I spent so much time learning cursive and learning typing when I was going to school. It would, though, if we had never invented those things, we'd have a bunch of kids with little chisels.
Thank God we invented those things. Thank God for the for bird feathers to make quills, quill pens, and then ink, wherever ink comes from, squids. I don't know where the first ink came from. Probably not squids.
Probably not squids, but I don't know where it came from.
I don't know either. That's a Google for another day. Mm. Okay. So the mystery. For centuries, this one, this segment is called A Linguistic Time Bomb.
Okay, cool. You named these?
I did.
You're so witty.
I have to keep my brain organized. For centuries, no one could... Well, I attempt to keep things organized on paper because my brain is not very organized.
Right. I get it.
For centuries, no one could read Egyptian hieroglyphs. I still can't.
No, I can't. No, I can't. I don't know anyone who can.
Apparently there are some folks. When Egypt fell to the Romans and then later to the Arabs, the knowledge of how to read them just disappeared. Priests stopped teaching it, and eventually the symbols became a riddle carved in stone. Fast forward again.
Literally.
Yeah. To 1799. We're back with Tiny Hands Napoleon. He invades Egypt, but because when you're a tiny man with a complex, you take it out on ancient civilizations. So the French troops are building a fort near Rosetta, again, modern day Rashid, and bam, one of them, Pierre François Bouchard.
Great name.
Yes. Digs up a 1,700 pound inscribed rock. That's almost a ton. A ton is 2,000 pounds.
How does he dig that up?
I don't think he did it.
Digs around it?
Not like with a tiny little like sandcastle bucket. I'm sure he was digging around it, right?
Okay,
like
an
archaeological site kind of thing. And they're like, hey, it's got birds and squiggles in Greek. That's weird. Cue the nerd sirens. Scholars with Napoleon's expedition lose their minds.
I did not know that. I did not know that when people were like warring and conquering, that they brought scientists with them. I did not know that. Is that always how it's been through history?
Like scholarly folk?
Sure. I mean, you're saying that Napoleon has like a group of scientists with him who are all excited to find this. Did Genghis Khan have a group of scientists?
Well, we don't know exactly what this guy's credentials are, right?
True.
They could say that he was scholarly. Well, scholarly compared to whom? Like,
okay. You know what okay. I mean? Yes,
did I know he didn't go to Cambridge.
Just like the nerdiest soldier in the
I
bunch.
Yes, the one who's like just interested in things. Mm-hmm. Like, must be the one who likes rocks and shells. Like,
love
that doesn't
it.
Necessarily mean he's highly intelligent. I love a good rock and shell too, but I wouldn't call myself a scientist.
That's cool. Okay, sorry, I got stuck on
no,
that.
No, that's totally cool. Fine.
So his little scientist is scientific minded.
Yeah, I mean,
people on his team.
I've got scholars with Napoleon's expedition. So the smartest people in the bunch, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, Nicolas Jacques Conté, he is quoted as saying, probably in French, but here's the English translation. This stone may furnish the key to the unknown characters.
They just knew it right away. That they knew, like, we'll be able to translate these little pictures.
They knew it was big. So none of them knew exactly what it meant yet, but they knew it was something meaningful.
Neat.
And they were right. So here's the thing. For over 1,400 years, no one could read those hieroglyphs. They were dismissed as, like you said earlier, like pictograms, like emojis, thought to represent only ideas, mm-hmm. not sound. So scholars started comparing the Greek section of the stone to the others. They guessed it was the same message, just in different languages. And they were right. So British scientist Thomas Young made early breakthroughs in the Demotic text, identifying that some symbols in hieroglyphs were phonetic, used to spell royal names like Ptolemy.
Cool.
Yeah. So now they had the Greek text, which was known and understood, side by side with the hieroglyphic translation. But it wasn't instant. That took over 20 years after the discovery of the stone before anyone cracked the code.
Wow.
Yeah. So then we have enter stage right or left or from wherever he came. Jean-François Champollion. No idea if I said that right. If I go at the end, then it sounds more legit. A French linguistic rock star obsessed with ancient languages. French
linguistic rock star?
Yeah.
That's what I want to be.
Listen, that's also a very niche career.
Yes.
So in 1822, so they found the stone in 1799. In 1822, he made the breakthrough. He figured out that hieroglyphs weren't just symbolic. They had phonetic elements, like sounds. And he is quoted as saying, "Je tiens l'affaire." No idea if I said that right, but it means, I've got it.
I've got it. That is really cool. I'm surprised it took them that long to figure it out, because most languages, I think, most writing, it has phonemic sounds associated with whatever grapheme you have on the paper. Grapheme is like a, whatever symbolizes the sound to you. So it could be a letter, could be squiggle, could be, so it's kind of surprising me if most of our languages are like that, that they would take them 20 years to realize that with this picture-y Egyptian language, not putting it together that they're phonemes.
Yeah.
Also, that would be a super fun job.
But maybe they only knew phonetics and not phonemic awareness, which a lot of people don't realize there's a difference.
Yeah, there is a difference.
Do you want to explain what phonetic and phonemic awareness is?
If phonics, phonetic, does have a symbol associated with it. So if you think of like the letter S makes the sound S, that's a phoneme. And the actual written S is a grapheme.
Okay.
But when you're talking about phonological awareness, you're talking about things that the sounds that we make when we're speaking and things about speaking and words that don't have a symbol associated with them that you can look at with your eyes. So that would be just with your ears saying, okay, what are the sounds in ship? Sh, ip. There's three sounds in ship. And that is phonological awareness.
And in any one of those bits and pieces of that puzzle, something can go haywire. And that's what makes literacy so hard for so many folks.
Oh, yeah. It's really challenging, actually, to learn and to teach. People, I don't think people know that. Because you don't remember it. When you're learning it, you're so little.
Don't ever make me teach people how to read. It won't happen. We'll be doing hieroglyphs. Just making it up. We'll have a new language by the end of the year.
I do think it would be really fun, though, to be that code breaker. Because do you ever get those books when you're sick? Would your mom ever buy you those logic puzzle books and puzzle books?
I do those all the time. Lateral thinking.
Yes. Yeah. And they have some where they're code breaking ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they're super fun.
And that game that we've played, the gems game where you have to like the process of elimination, that deductive reasoning stuff. I like that too.
I do too.
It's fun. The majority of Egyptian hieroglyphs represent sounds, not objects or ideas. So in English, this would be like, kind of connecting to what you were just saying, this would be like using pictures of a pear, like the fruit, pear, an ant, and a hood. And that would be parenthood.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So he cracked the code, this guy, this Jean-François Champollion. Hieroglyphs were part alphabet, part syllabary. Is it syllabary?
I don't know. But you're talking about syllables.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Part visual poetry.
Wow.
Part visual poetry. Suddenly, thousands of years of Egyptian writing came back to life, like turning on closed captions for the entire Nile Valley.
Oh my gosh, how exciting for them. Yeah. At the time, they could like then go into the pyramids or wherever, where there's probably
go back.
What does it say? Oh my gosh, did you ever do that at the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland? When you finally figure out the little code and you're running around, like, what is it?
And then you
want to
go back. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to go back through from the beginning. I love that ride. When you can pull on that one, the one reed that's actually, and it does something. I don't remember what it does. It makes something move.
Makes the ceiling come down a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. And the first person that in your group that discovers it, and then everybody around you who doesn't know is like freaked out.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, you broke it. We're all going to die. Disney, man. So good. All right. So then the British, they defeat the French. And they say, thanks for the artifact, mes amis.
They took it.
And they yank it. They yoinked it right out of their hands. And in 1802, it arrives at the British Museum with a label that literally reads, captured in Egypt by the British Army in 1801. And that's it.
It doesn't, like, explain what it is?
No, not really. That's what it was labeled as. And it's basically a historical version of, like, finders, keepers. colonial losers. So that sucks. But it wasn't the French who lost out. I mean, they did, but it's in Egypt, people. This thing is Egyptian.
Right.
That's what I feel anyway. So segment three, the politics of a stone. Here's the uncomfortable bit. Egypt wants the stone back. They did then, and they do now. They have repeatedly requested its return, citing cultural ownership and the colonial context of its removal.
That makes sense to me. They should just return it.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think they're wrong in doing that. So Zahi Hawass, Egypt's former Minister of Antiquities, said, wouldn't you love to be the Minister of Antiquities?
What is that?
So basically you oversee all of the ancient artifacts in your country.
That'd be incredible.
Yeah.
That'd be incredible.
Yeah.
Only one job like it in the world, or one for each country.
I wonder if we have one here. I mean, I know we have a lot of archaeological, anthropological, paleontological experts. All the things of buried stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? I remember when I was at Mount Vernon, which was the home of George Washington, back east this last summer, that they fairly recently had dug up these ampules full of some sort of liquid.
Cool.
On the property. They were still finding things years and years later, hundreds of years later. All right. So that guy, Zahi Hawass, Egypt's former Minister of Antiquities, said, it is the icon of our Egyptian identity. That's big.
Yes, it's big. Egypt has a history that goes back so far.
Way farther than any of us.
I think they have a right to all the things that they created.
I agree with you.
Back in the BC times.
I agree with you. There's so many people that have such a, like a sports mind about stuff when it comes to like colonialism and imperialism. Mm-hmm. Like, if we were bigger, faster, stronger, and we dominated you to take it, then we deserve it. Like, it's not a wrestling tournament.
No.
You don't, it's not a trophy, like, made out of plastic that some Joe Schmo made. Like, it's not,
right.
It's way bigger than that.
Right.
And it shouldn't be treated as a, well, I beat you, so
it's just
I get your land, I get your, because I have more dominance and more strength and more weapons or whatever. I just don't believe in that, but I know a lot of people do.
Yeah, and a lot of the world has been shaped from that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of something I have in my house that would be similar. Like, is there anything in my house that I've just taken because I feel like I have the right to it? I can't think of anything.
I've been known to take a rock.
A rock from where?
Or a stick.
Sure, from the beach, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if the beach wanted it back,
that says, if there's signage that says don't take any, don't remove anything,
I don't.
Partly because I think I'm going to be cursed if I do.
Right.
I think the land is going to come get me. But, and yes, is you were just about to say, right? If somebody sent a letter saying, please return that stick.
Right.
I'd be like, yes, you got it. As soon as I can. Or
yeah,
I'll ship it.
The Minister of Antiquities is like, we'd like this back.
Yeah, we saw this in your yard and we recognize it from the lighthouse grounds.
Yeah, then I'd have to be like, I did take that without permission.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, but not everybody is as cool as we are. And that's just a sad fact. So the Rosetta Stone wasn't just a linguistic treasure. It became a political pawn. The British Museum says, yeah, but look how many people see it here. Great Britain maintains that the stone was legally acquired and is accessible to a global audience. It's the eternal museum debate. Universal access versus cultural theft.
All of that can be debated. The words legally acquired, like, what does that mean exactly?
Right.
And what does that mean? People
accessible to a global audience?
Yeah.
Well, the people who can travel there or who already live there. So that's not everybody.
Right. And maybe Egypt wants more people to travel there. And if they had the stone there.
They got a Pizza Hut now right by the pyramids.
Cool.
No, I don't think it's cool, actually. But, I mean, if there's people who needed a little home away from home to get there, well, there you go. Okay, but that's a fascinating thing. Like, we only see the pyramids from one side in photos and such, because if you go the other way, like, there's a street of, like, Americana, like, right there.
Oh, how
right across the street from the big old pyramids, Giza. Isn't that crazy?
It is weird.
So this has sparked, like you said, debate, worldwide debate over artifact repatriation, especially when it comes to items taken during times of conflict. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that reparations bit. The debate continues to this day. Who owns ancient history? The people who found it, the people who deciphered it, or the people whose ancestors wrote it? Meanwhile, the Rosetta Stone just wants to take a nap and not be touched by tourist fingers. And it can't be now. It's behind glass. Hello, little yard bunny. There's this little black rabbit that lives in Amanda's neighborhood, and I see him here every time I come.
He's mostly in my yard, in my front yard. It's wonderful.
He's so cute. He was obviously a pet.
Yeah, all our neighbors comment on it when we live on a corner, so we get a lot of people walking and biking, walking their dogs, and they know Black Bunny is usually here in our yard.
He's so cute.
He is cute. He does not look like a wild bunny. Like you said, I think somebody
he's domestic.
Lost him.
Not anymore. Now he's like, don't call me domestic. All right, so back to segment 4. There's 5 segments.
Oh, okay.
The legacy and the lore. There's something almost magical about it. A single object that unlocked an entire civilization. But here's a fun twist. Of course, not every theory about the Rosetta Stone is academic. Some fringe theorists, and I love a fringe theorist.
Yes, you do. We both do.
I am a fringe theorist.
Yes.
You're a fringe theorist. We're all fringe theorists. That's why we're on this podcast. They suggest the trilingual text was planted by extraterrestrials.
Why?
To test humanity's intelligence.
That's so
like those
connected.
Books your mom would get you when you were sick. The SAT test for
those come
humans.
From aliens. Let's see who's the smartest.
Napoleon says these guys are the top of the smarts, but let's throw this at him and find
Wait,
out.
Something you said reminded me of something. I can't think.
Fringe theorists?
No. What'd you say after fringe theorists?
Trilingual text planted by extraterrestrials.
Oh, so there's so many things in Egypt that people keep trying to tie to extraterrestrials.
Or
like the pyramids
in
themselves.
The Americas, right? In Central and South America.
Yes.
Same kind of deal.
Yes. And you had said on our podcast, I think just last week.
A couple weeks ago now.
It really bothers you when people try and take intelligent masterpieces of art or of engineering or whatever that brown people have made and try and be like, well, they couldn't have made it. It must be the aliens.
They had to have had help from extraterrestrials.
Right. I know that
and
really
those same people
you.
Will say, well, extraterrestrials aren't real. There's no proof. Well, then Occam's razor here would mm-hmm. suggest the people who lived nearest this thing, their ancestors probably built it.
Right.
Just because you can't figure it out, jabroni, doesn't mean they couldn't. God. The arrogance and ignorance, just wild. Even though it is super fun to think about aliens mm-hmm. planting stuff on our planet. I mean, I think that'd be hilarious.
There was a story just last year. I don't know if you remember this, but people were finding these metal pillars.
Oh, yes.
Metal pillars
yeah.
in the middle of nowhere.
What do they
nowhere.
Call them? The, oh, God, like in 2001 A Space Odyssey. What do they call those things? Monoliths.
A monolith. Yeah, people were finding monoliths. In the middle of nowhere, why people stumbled upon them, I don't even know, because they literally were like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they would be there, and people would see them, take pictures. Maybe they'd be there for a few days, enough time to tell some of their friends, hey, go hike out and go, you can see this. And they'd see it and confirm it, and then it would just disappear.
I think it's awesome.
And people thought it was aliens leaving monoliths to leave messages or something for...
Or like put a pin in it. Like it's like,
it's like a
their
pin.
Map. Look for the monolith
That's
in the middle of this place. And who knows, maybe that was for triangulating different things. It could have been for military use.
It could have, yes. And they're not going to admit anything, so they leave it up to us to just imagine what it could be.
Use our sci-fi knowledge to fill in the gaps.
It is a good prank, though.
Oh my gosh, if it were a bunch of artists, that's hilarious.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know how
really
they pull it
funny.
Off, but it's...
And apparently they can't be moved or budged. Like
No, but and yet they are moved when they disappear somehow.
They get there, and then they are gone, and under the cover of darkness or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, so... Others believe the stone's rediscovery was part of a divine timing, that we weren't meant to decode Egypt until the modern world was ready to hear its wisdom. Or ready, quote unquote, to understand the spiritual truths of Egypt.
Wow.
I mean, again, what's our metrics for, are we ready enough to learn about some guy's telling me the fifth's tax break? Like, that doesn't seem like earth-shattering wisdom that we need to be quote-unquote ready for.
Right. It does remind me, though, of what we're doing.
But I guess the rest of the hieroglyphic things could be... Yeah, maybe. I didn't think it through. Go ahead.
it reminds me of what we're dealing with right now with disclosure. You know, all these, we get these like weird little bits of people seeing crazy UFOs or UAPs, right. And the government will come out and slowly admit, well, yes, we have non-human biologics, or yes, this is not any technology that we know of, but there's not full disclosure yet. Right. It's like, what you're saying reminds me of how, is someone waiting for us to be ready? And who decides that? What is ready? And who decides when we're there?
And how are we all going to be ready at the same time?
Yes.
That's like...
That's not possible.
That'd be like if we all had to pee at the same time. Like, that's not how humans work. That's not how living things work.
Right.
I think, yeah... Yeah. Anyway, so there's even a theory that hidden messages are embedded in the syntax of the hieroglyphs, like a cosmic CAPTCHA, you know, those things that you have to type to, you type in your email address and password, and then it's like, but also type these random drunk looking letters on this line, and then nope, that wasn't right.
I get so frustrated. Sometimes I can't read those.
I know.
The way the font is,
and,
I cannot.
Right, and some are backwards or upside down, some are capped, some are not, some are... Yeah, fuzzy. Mm-hmm. Like, or for kids, like on their iPads, they'll have to do it every once in a while. And it'll say, find all of the stoplights. And they're like, I'm 10.
I'm 10. I don't drive.
What's a stoplight? I see cars, but what's a stoplight? And what? Which parts of this are the stoplight and which aren't? So It's silly. I think that the real magic of this is that something so mundane could become something so momentous.
Right. You said it was just a little notice. Just a little.
Yeah.
Here's what he's done for you.
Yep. You're welcome. But, and it makes me wonder how many other Rosetta Stones are still out there waiting to be discovered. Who knows?
Who knows? There could be all kinds of, I'm sure we've lost tons of languages.
Well, we know we have. Yeah. Even in just this country alone. And in Central and South America, indigenous languages, gone.
Did they have any writing associated with them, or was it all verbal?
Not mostly. They're mostly
That's
oral.
That's tricky, too, because the oral ones, I can see how they would could phase out if they're not being passed down.
Especially if you eradicate an entire population of people that nobody can pass it on. Makes it tough. So here's what we've learned. Bureaucracy might be boring, but it can be eternal. Rosetta Stone, that's all it was. One well-placed rock can change the course of history, and colonialism ruins everything, even archaeology.
Oh, it's kind of sad.
Yeah. That's my cynical sort of summary.
Yeah, your take on it.
But I think I would like to know more. Like, it was just a deep dive that I didn't want to get into, of, not yet anyway, of what other things did they use to, like, what was the next thing they translated using this system? What was the next thing? What was the next thing in hieroglyphs? Because hieroglyphs were everywhere. So where did they go next with that Rosetta Stone? And how did they pack it out? Like, you couldn't take a photo of it and then bring it to the next site.
They didn't take a photo? Did they have photos?
Photos. It was 1799.
But when did photos come in? They were...
After that.
In the 1800s, when did they...
Maybe not too long
because
after.
Because you said they were still translating it up through 1825 or something.
Yes. So when was photography?
But I think they probably did an etching. You know how you can put paper?
Oh, like with a crayon?
Yep. And then use a crayon to etch it. And then they could have used that and carried it with them.
Photography was invented, in 1800. So maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they had a little flash cam. Where you can't move.
Either that or the etching. Yeah, I think they could
have a rubbing.
A rubbing?
Yeah, an etching is where you're carving into something.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah, rubbing really is where you take that crayon on its side, peel the paper off. Very satisfying. I've done it in a couple cemeteries on gravestones.
Fine.
Okay, let me go back to my notes here to wrap it up. So the Rosetta Stone's legacy is massive. It launched Egyptology with is a field. Like, the study of Egypt is now a whole field. It inspired decades of scholarship and changed how we see written language itself. It also sparked a deeper question. How do we preserve and interpret cultures not our own? The Rosetta Stone teaches us that nothing is truly lost forever. With enough curiosity, patience, and maybe a little obsession, even the oldest mysteries can be understood.
That's really cool. I learned something today. Thank you, Educational Lindsay, Educational Podcast.
Educational.
Educational.
Well, thank you, everybody, and Amanda, thank you for joining me and us in the paranormal classroom.
Do you have homework for people today?
No. Do you have any ideas?
I think you should go rub something. an etching. Not an etching, but a rubbing.
I will not end the podcast with, I think you should go rub something.
Send us a picture of some writing or weird writing that you've found.
Or write us a review in hieroglyphs.
Oh, okay. Oh, I love it. Write us a review.
You can use emojis. That's fine.
Emojis.
Modern day hieroglyphs. all right. Well, stay curious.
I forgot.
I'm pointing to Amanda every time. What happens at the end of our
episode? I don't remember.
Episode?
Why is it? Why am I not
class
remembering?
Dismissed.
Do it again. Start over.
Okay.
Edit this out.
Stay curious.
Class dismissed.
And don't open the door.